Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
This piece was brought to you by Roberta's, robertaspizza.com.
This is Sherry Bayer from All in the Industry. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Holy cow, we're back. Can you dig it? We survived the fight last night. And just barely.
Yeah.
Just barely. What a snooze fest that was. But we're here. It's Sunday. And it's May. And outdoor fucking starts today right here on the Heritage Radio Network on Arts and Seizures. And Judy McGuire is still on permanent vacation. I suppose I should start shopping for a real co-host one of these days. But in the meanwhile, today I'm going mono a mono with the last real writer in the East Village. Glad to have Tiger Moody here with us.
Howdy, folks.
There he is. And your new book, Induction of the Sycophant, on the much-revered Kix Books.
Induction of the Sycophant.
The same people that bring us Norton Records. Did you watch the fight last night, Tiger?
I sure did.
What do you think? You know, it's funny you mentioned that because I've got a very special song to play at our break today, which will become all very germane very quickly. But yeah, it was kind of a snooze. I guess these guys had no real impetus to knock each other out, right?
Mayweather's done trying to knock people out. Well, it's what I expected.
It's about what you expected. You know what was a really great match was the Mayweather Big Show match. I think it was WrestleMania. I don't remember which WrestleMania it was, 22 or something. I don't remember. As you know, these boxer versus wrestling matches usually suck. I mean, they usually just fall flat.
With the exception of Enoki Ali.
I was going to say the Enoki Ali thing. I mean, do you think you remember that being spectacular, or is it just a fond memory of childhood?
It's a fond memory of childhood, but yeah, no, it wasn't spectacular. He crab walked for 15 rounds.
Yeah, it was, right?
Ali was in the hospital for a month.
Yeah, right. Right. Yeah. Right. And Andy Kaufman had his neck broken by Jerry Lawler, too. I mean, there are lots of things that happened in the ring that, you know, maybe are not quite as they seem, Tiger. I'm just saying.
But what happened with Mayweather?
But Mayweather and the Big Show was great because usually the boxer's a celebrity and they want to put him over, you know. But the Big Show just, like, beat the shit out of him. I mean, he really ran him from pillar to post, and it was absolutely incredible. Well, Mayweather was, like, a really good sport. I mean, he took a lot of bumps. And then he won by cheating with a pair of brass knuckles, but at, like, the 20-minute mark. I mean, it was the best boxer versus wrestler match of all time, and it's on YouTube. Anybody who's a wrestling fan down to or a boxing fan or just likes wants to see Mayweather have the shit kicked out of him, I highly recommend you look it up.
I'd rather see the video afterwards when he went home and beat up his wife.
Yeah, not so much.
Okay.
Not so much. And in no way, really, this is an endorsement of that. Here on Arts and Seizures, we are against domestic violence.
Absolutely.
We are a very, very progressive show. We are against poverty. Yeah. We are against rape. We are against racism. We're taking a hardcore left-wing stance here on Arts and Seizures.
It's just a voyeuristic thing. I can't control it.
Well, let's talk about your new book, which is entirely groovy. Why don't you tell us what it's about? And it's got an odd tie to the world of comic books, which we really love here on Arts and Sciences.
Well, it's a novel. It's basically a fairy tale. It's called Induction of the Sycophant, and it explores the lives of a few cartoonists and children in the early 1950s. It is loosely based on actual events, although it's completely fictional.
Well, we talked about Induction of the Sycophant as a play on Seduction of the Innocent, a famous totem of, I guess, the comic book scare. The comic book
Yes, yeah. Seduction of the Innocent being a A book by Dr. Frederick Wortham, which was released, what was it, 1953, I think?
If you say so.
Yeah, around thereabouts. And he was a muckraker. He did a lot of good things, but also... He caused a lot of trouble.
Well, I think he's mostly reviled among comic book fans. I mean, he's kind of like Haman on Purim. People hear his name, and boo, hiss.
He did.
I mean, he's the guy that, you know...
he destroyed the comic book industry. Right. He decimated it.
Right. But somehow, by a byproduct of this, is we got Mad Magazine out of the deal. We lost Mad the comic book, but we got Mad the magazine, right?
That's true. Silver lining, yes.
We were talking about this last week when we were hanging out in the East Village in Tompkins Park, because that's what we do because we're old beatniks. You actually took a tour of Mad Magazine when you were a kid, which would have been my dream. It would have been like...
I did.
Yeah. And every time you turned around, was it like, sprink, fassoom, bleep, blop.
Well, more or less.
John Martin sound effects at every corner.
Kind of. When we got there, I was about 10 years old, and I went there with my mother and my little sister, and they had a really crotchety... secretary who let us in, and then
you sure it wasn't just Dave Berg?
Yeah,
it was just hanging out, because he always seemed like he would be a drag to hang out with.
Yeah, it could have been Dave Berg in a house dress. There wasn't much difference, but anyway, she was kind of like a white Aunt Esther. But there was in the front, in the reception room, was just covered with towers of paperbacks and magazines of foreign editions of Mad.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, you were allowed to take whatever you wanted, so she encouraged us to take whatever we wanted, and then. She knocked on Bill Gaines' door, and she's like, Bill, you know, there's some kids here who want to talk to you. And you just heard this moan and a groan, and he didn't sound happy. Finally, he opens a door, and it's just filled with smoke, and it was the coolest room I'd ever seen. I mean, there were Zeppelins hanging from the ceiling, and there were, you know, oil paintings of the old witch and everything, and just cool shit everywhere. But, you know, he wasn't very nice to us. He was muttering under his breath, cursing, farting.
Fucking kids.
Yeah, basically. That's exactly what he said. And then my mother was getting really embarrassed, and she was trying to drag us out of the office because we were bothering the man. But then he went over to the window, and he pulled up a shade, and there was a giant King Kong face in the window, and he pretended to be scared and almost fell backwards. And then he became the nicest guy in the world.
Oh, he put on a little show for
That's awesome. We met Al Feldstein, and you know, it was pretty cool.
Well, the crazy thing is that you were invited, though. I mean, you didn't just like show up unannounced. Hey, we're here to take the Nickel Tour. I mean, they actually offered... You were welcome to come.
I found it in the small print of the magazine. Yeah, they did offer tours if you read the fine print in the beginning of the issue of Mad at the bottom, and yeah,
so meet the usual gang of idiots.
Exactly. Yeah, they were once that was over. Yeah, they were very welcoming. We stayed for a couple hours, and they were great.
Hey, that's the show. That's the Willy Wonka thing, you know.
Yeah. I was really disappointed that none of the artists were there. I assumed.
Spring.
Zap. Exactly. But, you know, and about 2 weeks later, I got a manila envelope in the mail, and I opened it up, and it was a drawing from Jack Davis. And either Jerry or Al or Bill had actually said to him, like, this kid came and he was bummed out, he didn't get to meet you, so he sent me a drawing.
Oh, that is just beyond kind. That is like old school menschy kind of crazy stuff. That's awesome.
It may have been the highlight of my childhood.
Dude, just hearing the story is like the highlight of my childhood.
Yeah, it was pretty amazing.
I mean, can I imagine like trying to get my mom to bring me to Mad Magazine? I grew up on Mad Magazine. Did you experience the same phenomenon that I'd often read the parody of the movie before I saw the movie? And a lot of times it'd be like an R-rated movie like The Exorcist or something that I wasn't allowed to see. So I'd be reading the parody, you know, the more trucker Lou Silverstone, you know, parody in the magazine, you know, and then in my head I knew what the movie was all about.
Yeah.
You know, like long before I got to see the movie. I mean, I remember 2001, which the satire was 201 Minutes Space Idiocy. Mm. And I definitely read that before I saw the movie. So
my personal favorite was A Clockwork Lemon. But yes. But, yeah, no, of course. And my mother didn't want to take us at all, but once she finally found out it was free, she acquiesced.
Yeah. Yeah, but your mom was kind of hip, you were telling me, right? She was kind of a beatnik.
She was. She was a dirty beatnik. Yeah.
She'd have been very welcome on this show, that's for sure. But she married a cop.
Well, yeah. At the time, he was an army officer, but, yeah, he eventually ended up being a cop.
And this formed you how?
Amongst other things. you're looking at it. Into this, you know, manly Adonis.
Well, you know, like I said at the beginning of the show, you're the last real guy, last real writer, I think, in East Village. I mean, there's something, you know, about you, and we've talked about this before. I know a lot of assholes who pretend to be writers, a lot of people who wear it on their sleeves.
Now, I deny being a writer.
You know, but I think you're the real deal, and it's awesome. I think it's great that our friend Miriam over at Norton Records and, of course, Kix Books had the vision, you know, to actually put out your book.
Yeah, without her, I wouldn't, you know, I would still be unpublished forever. And, you know, I can't thank her enough. She is visionary.
That's a fucking dirty racket, the publishing racket.
It sucks, man. Yeah, full of cunts.
But no kidding. Kix Books, we love them here. And, of course, your label mates, you know, the great stable include, like, you know, Outer Space, Negroes, and Beatniks, basically, is what they publish. So you're in very good company.
Yeah, exactly.
I want to talk a little bit more comic books, because this is so much about the world of EC Comics and horror comics. You're a pretty big horror comic fan, and
I am.
And I know comic books kind of defined my childhood as well. Which are your favorites?
Well, you know, I first get started with, you know, I read superhero comics like every little kid. You know, Spider-Man. Superman, Batman. I was more of a DC guy than a Marvel guy, but
really?
I read everything. Yeah, well, I'm a traditionalist, you know, so I you know, although ironically, I like the American League better than the National League, but yeah, no. I like DC, but my father gave me a stack of Classics Illustrateds from when he mm-hmm. was a kid, and I got really into old comics at that point, and he started buying me the Warren reprints of The Spirit.
Uh-huh.
So even as like a 6 or 7 year old, I was getting really into the Golden Age stuff, and you could still buy. I could go to the Cranberry Bookworm in New Jersey and buy Golden Age comics for a quarter or 50 cents. So, you know, I was destroying these what would now be priceless comic books, but that was my
I had a copy early on of Jules Pfeiffer's book. It was a compilation called The Great Comic Book Heroes.
That was a great book. I right? wore out my copy.
It's still next to my bed, actually.
Yeah.
I mean, quite literally, it's on my nightstand
with, like, all the origin stories.
With all the origin stories of The Flash and The Spirit,
right?
And I just read it over
Plastic
and over.
Man,
you know, Plastic
the Spectre,
Man.
Yeah.
I mean, like, crazy stuff, right?
Yeah.
I think I'm in a large way. I mean, I think we're formed by comic books. We can't, you know, help ourselves. I like superheroes, too. But the day that I, like, discovered marijuana and Robert Crumb was a big day. The first thing I saw was the Meatball comic.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Meatball. And yeah. It starts raining meatballs. I love that. That's what I would like to happen, like, when Morrissey plays Madison Square Garden. Just like a shitstorm of meatballs coming at him.
That would be ideal. That's, yeah. When I look at Morrissey, I think of meatball rain. Waiting to happen.
I'll tell you what, let's take a quick break. But before we do that, I want to remind everybody out there in listener land that we are member supported here on Arts, Citizens, Seizures, and the Heritage Radio Network. We're in the middle of a massive Kickstarter campaign, so look around the website if you're looking. Donate some money. Become
Donate.
A member. Tiger will come over to your house and hang out with you if you send us enough money. Our tote bags are much better than the ones they give you at NPR, which stands for No Pizza Radio, by the way. The pizza's going to be here. And I guarantee you, when you do... this life of ours, whatever that show is, no pizza, only here at Heritage Radio. So please join the party, be a member. We're going to take a quick break and be back with Tiger Moody on Arts, Citizens, and Seizures. And what was your review of the fight last night? Okay, here we go. This is Mad Magazine, 1963.
Roberta's, a super duper awesome place. Roberta's is a very, 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 very proud sponsor
of the Heritage Radio Network. We're also super awesome.
Thank you, Heritage.
All right, and thanks to Roberta's. How do you dig that ad from our sponsor?
I dug it.
Yeah, it's a gas. It's about, I'd say it's about as mature as the Mad Magazine song.
Yes.
You know, when I was reading comics when I was a kid, my father always told me, you should grow the hell up already. When I was like 7, this is what he would tell me. You should grow up.
You should have grown up.
I should have. Well, yeah, I'm not really into growing up.
What were you thinking?
I'm more into evolving.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, I know I'm an adult.
What's the next step?
Growing up, I don't know, the space baby at the end of 201 minutes of Space Idiocy, right?
Word. What's up with that? I never got that.
What, the space baby?
Yeah, that movie's too smart for me. I like it, but it always makes me feel like an idiot. It kind of bums me out at the same time.
My favorite joke is I'll never forget, in the Mad Magazine satire, at the beginning, all the monkeys are like standing around like the big monolith, right?
Oh yeah, yeah.
And one of them says, or maybe at this point, I guess they're on the moon because the monkeys wouldn't be talking. So the astronauts discover the same thing on the moon. One guy says, "Well, what the hell's that?" And the other guy says, "Well, it's the box the UN building came in." I don't know. When I was like 8, I thought that was the funniest thing of all time.
That is pretty funny.
It is funny,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. I'm processing it. Yeah, okay. God bless him.
Good Lord, Mad Magazine and books. And it was my dream to write for Mad Magazine. I used to draw cartoons and send them in, but I never heard back from them. I mean, they were like really bad copies of like shit I saw in the magazine. I mean, I was like 7 when I did this.
It's funny that you say that. Because
but I sent it all the time, you know, and I never even got like one of the Alfred E. Newman, you know, things that you could buy like 1,300 of them for like 12 cents.
Wow, that's so cruel.
I know.
Yeah, they hated you.
They did.
Yeah.
That's what my father told me.
Yeah.
He said, they don't want you.
Yeah.
I'm the product of very encouraging parents. But, and yet somehow
you and I
kind of defied expectations and sat down and, I don't know, did our homework and wrote some books. So, I mean, okay, yesterday we were talking about word count. How many words are in this book? This is kind of technical talk and inside baseball.
This is actually
shit,
a fairly short book, despite the page length. It's probably about 58,000
really? I would guess that this was a 90,000 word book because it feels like it's got some heft to it.
Absolutely not.
Feels like it's got some muscle to it.
No, I asked that there was thick paper used. I wanted a big spine because, you know, you could hit somebody with it.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Oh. I've clobbered someone with a book of mine. That was like one of the great pleasures.
I've had the misfortune of being beaten up with a book once by a woman. I'm not kidding.
She threw the book at you. Ho, ha, hee, ha,
yeah.
Or something like that. So what's your writing process to write this? I mean, I write mostly nonfiction, so it's a different thing, the creative process, and a different kind of homework. But it is homework.
Yeah. I had absolutely no idea how to write a book, but basically I beg to differ, sir. I was a shut-in for about 3 or 4 months, and I didn't leave the house, and you know, except to buy toilet paper and, you know, cornflakes, and I just sat there and wrote a book.
And drugs?
Yeah, maybe. But no, it's not easy writing a book.
People do it all the time. So I'm always amazed. I'm amazed how, with the help of my laptop computer, I haven't written 40 more. Relative to, like, you know, Charles Dickens, you know, sitting down with his quill pen, not to mention like the motherfucker who had to typeset the thing. I mean, it just seems so easy right now. I feel like I should be a lot more.
Yeah, that's a good point. It does boggle my mind that you haven't written 40 more. But let's. I didn't go to school. I didn't go to college. I was never a writer. So it's just a, you know, feeling out process. I started writing emails a few years ago, and I'm not kidding.
I started writing.
Basically, what happened was I had a horrible February 2011. My dog died. My wife left me, and I turned 40 in about a span of 10 days. And I was either going to blow my brains out or do something else. So I just started writing. And that's how it began.
Ah, writing is therapy. I've heard of this.
I didn't even think of it as therapy. I just thought it was, you know, like, is that therapy?
You know, it's weird. Usually when I'm writing a book, it's like I don't want to drink because I need a clear head. Clarity is very important to me. And it actually kind of – the writing process kind of sobers me up, and it gives me a lot of focus because I like to write in the morning, like before I look at, you know, Facebook or the Huffington Post or, you know, the New York Times or whatever, because I feel once that shit gets into my head, it's like done. It's like the purity of my message has already been diluted.
I don't think I've ever had a clear head in my entire life.
Well, you don't knock it till you've tried it. Yeah, but it depends. I mean, the book I'm writing, I'm working on this kind of this childhood memoir, and it makes me want to drink all the time. It's weird. It's the first time that's happened. Someone sent me this internet meme the other day. It's one of these goofy, stupid things that people put on the internet, but I thought it was kind of about right, actually, describing the creative process. And it's number one, this is awesome. Number two, this is tricky. Number three, this is shit. Number four, I am shit. Number five, this might be okay after all. And number six, this is awesome. That pretty much sounds like my mornings.
Yeah, that's about right.
And then repeat, yeah, and then rinse and repeat the next day when I look at it. Oh, this is shit. What was I thinking?
Yeah, it usually takes me about 6 months to revise something.
How hard are you on yourself?
Very.
Yeah?
The worst, yeah.
I mean, to me, wood writing always came out of revision.
I whip myself with barbed wire. I'm a really awful one myself.
And how about the gatekeepers at Kix Books?
How are they on me?
Yeah, I mean, Miriam whips. She cracked that whip. Tiger, no, I don't like that adverb. No,
she's sweet as pie.
No, that should be a comma there, not a semicolon.
Absolutely not. No, Miriam's the sweetest. She's great. She's very encouraging. Nothing like that.
That's it. That's it. Come on, hype Miriam. We love Miriam here, and we love Norton Records and Kix Books. Say lots of nice things about them because they are local heroes. And I'm telling you, no kidding.
They're the coolest.
Versus like traditional, quote unquote, traditional publishing. You know, being on Little Brown. My last book came out Little Brown, like big fucking deal. They, you know, what did they really do for us? That Kix Book will do 30,000 more things for you.
I just
with the association, you're going to reach so many more people, and you've already like you know had. You know, the status of, like, you know, awesome conferred on you just by, like, being with this crew.
Yeah, I have zero interest in big publishers, and that will be perpetual. I will never be on a big publishing house, no matter how much money they throw at me.
You say that now, well...
No. I mean, not like it would happen, because they wouldn't be interested in my stuff anyway, but...
What is that, Liz? Is that Random House on the phone? Is that Random House calling in here with a big offer for Tiger Moody? Hollywood's calling, Tiger. Hollywood's calling. We want to make a movie, Induction of the Sycophant. And who's going to star in this book?
Didn't say anything about Hollywood.
Selling out already. So who would star in Induction of the Sycophant, if it were, and notice my clever use of the subjunctive, and not the past tense, because we're past tense. We live in bungalows now.
Yeah, I see. let's see. Jeremy Irons.
I like that.
Robert Redford. Johnny Depp. Who else would be in this movie?
It's funny, because all those people would be in my book as well.
We need some
more. In my book, playing me.
There's got to be someone who could play. There's got to be a lot of Jews. We need Jews in
Jews.
It.
Jews, well, comic books and Jews, you know. That's like pancakes and syrup.
Hand. Exactly.
You know,
yeah,
right
yeah.
there, it's like soup and a sandwich.
Yeah. God bless them.
So you're still calling the East Village home.
I love the East Village.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Why?
I mean, I hate it.
What is it that you still love about it? Because it certainly isn't the same place that we used to live in when we got there.
We're second best. Where else am I going to go? I mean, it's not what it used to be, but...
But then again, what is?
Exactly. Yeah. You find me a better place and I'll go there. I mean, is it... No, it... It stinks compared to what it was 25 years ago, but...
And what was it 25 years ago, exactly?
It was a rollicking good time. It was wide open. It was
wide open.
Yeah, you could buy, you know, Coke or heroin at any deli, you know? It was.
I knew all those delis.
Yeah, yeah.
In the street corner. Man, I bought a lot of weed at the corner of 10th Street and 2nd Avenue, you know? And then, you know, then they moved to 9th Street, and there was a candy store in Avenue C that I used to like going to get bags of weed. And
I lived right above one of those places. It was a plaster wedding cake place on Avenue C and 8th Street.
And where they have, like, it's
133 Avenue C.
Right, it's like, the candy store, and they had like one like Butterfingers bar was the entire inventory.
Exactly, and it'd be very faded. And then we had, you know, in the backyard there was like, you know, just stacks of cages with gamecocks in them, you know. You know, wake you up every morning. It's great.
And it's funny, when we were hanging out the other day, you said to meet me at Tompkins Square, where the band shell used to be.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Lots of great shows. You know, I was, of course, a... After comic books, I was into punk rock, and I was a skinhead for many years, and we used to go to shows in Tompkins all the time, and obviously CB's and the Pyramid. And
you feel nostalgic? The Pyramid's still open, right? I mean, oddly enough, the Pyramid, I believe, still is an open and functioning place, though I haven't been in there in, like, you know...
This is true, but they don't have hardcore matinees anymore.
No. But I think it still, like, functions as a club of some sort, right?
It is, and I noticed they have a lot of hip-hop nights there.
We should have a party there. I mean, it was always a great place. I used to like playing at the Pyramid Club. That was a good place back when.
Yeah.
I mean, I'll tell you, do you feel nostalgic for the Mars Bar, for CBGB's, for all these places? And I mean, do you think it's changed too much? We do a lot of shows here on Arts and Seizures. We call it Dude, Where's My New York?
Yeah, time marches on. You know, that's part of the city, and I think people complain about it. I don't know. It's just, I mean, every generation complains. Every generation's going to say it wasn't as good as it used to be, and they're all right. You know, do I miss all that stuff? Yeah, but, you know, whatever. There's new things to out there and to focus on.
I was walking around New York City, Manhattan, last week with a cousin of mine who's going to be 75 years old. And this was a guy, he's got a great backstory. He was arrested at the 1968 Democratic Convention. He was a sound engineer, and he said he went to set up the sound for some stupid rock band. He's so funny because he hates rock. He's of the generation where he missed the rock and roll thing. You know, he likes classical music and jazz and blues, and doesn't understand the need for large amplification. I mean, it's just like anathema to him. But he was a sound engineer, and they needed someone to set up for the band, which presumably was the MC5. So my cousin, I'm trying to connect the dots, is the guy that set up the sound system for the MC5, for the only band that showed up at the 68 convention. Famously, the Jefferson Airplane and all these pussy San Francisco hippie bands decided not to show up. But anyway, he got arrested. And we were walking around New York City the other day, and he was just telling me these stories, how great it was in 1962, you know? And it sounded remarkably like how great it was in 1982.
Huh.
I mean, it was amazing. His lifestyle didn't seem that different. It was a little bit cheaper, but I mean, he told me he was living in this great place. It was $250 a month, but he also had two roommates.
Right.
You know, that he was sharing with. And one of the guys actually wasn't there because he was living with his girlfriend, but in 1962, you couldn't really live with your girlfriend.
Right.
So he was just kind of like,
you know,
just paying the rent, and it was easy, but it sounded amazingly like the more things changed, the more it didn't really change. It wasn't as wide open as I had imagined his experience to be.
No.
We're a pretty hip and swinging cat.
It's funny you mentioned the Jefferson Airplane. My mother used to be roommates with Grace Slick, and she actually, speaking of 1968 in Chicago, she worked her first legal job. My mom was a lawyer, was with Melvin Belli, who represented the Stones, you know, at Altamont.
And Jack Ruby.
Yeah, amongst many others, yeah.
We had a note from Marvin Belli when I was working for High Society magazine, and we had all these Polaroids of Chuck Berry with white women, naked white women, and Chuck Berry. It was like a big stack of them. I was in the office the day they came in, and they were later published, and we got a letter, a cease and desist.
Right.
And the boss who got the letter, he's like, Marvin Belli, hey, we rate pretty high.
Yeah.
And he put the letter on the refrigerator with a magnet.
Right.
The ultimate sign of pornographer contempt.
Wait, were you responsible for that Is This Chuck Berry video?
No, I'm not. But yeah. but Screw did peddle that for a while.
Yeah. Is this Chuck Berry? Yeah. Is this Chuck Berry?
Yeah. Those were the days. Hey, listen, before we go, you got a big gig tonight. And I want to tell everybody to come on out to the East Village tonight to see you. And Lenny Kaye is going to introduce you, and Kix Books is going to be there, and what's happening. And
that's right.
Where can someone go to see you and get a book to face?
Okay, it's a book launch for Induction of the Sycophant, new novel on Kix Books. It's going to be at 7:30 p.m. We're going to gather, and I think the event's going to begin around 8. It's at Kingston Hall, which I believe is 149. It's either 149 or 139 2nd Avenue. That's between 9th and 10th Street, and on the second floor. And it's a beautiful space, and drinks are 2-for-1, and, you know, there'll be lots of hot chicks and, you know, handsome dudes and, you know, fine literature.
All right. So
and Lenny Kaye.
And Lenny Kaye. And that's awesome. So that's tonight in the Swinging East Village on 2nd Avenue between 9th and 10th. You can go meet the great Tiger Moody, the last real author in the East Village, and get a copy of his new book, Induction of the Sycophant, on our very favorite Kix Books. And you're an old-fashioned kind of guy, but if someone wanted to reach out and find you on the social media machine, can they do that?
I am on Facebook. Yes.
Okay.
Not on Twitter, not on Instagram, or none of that other crap, but you can find me on the Facebook, or you can email me at joshuamoodynyc@gmail.com.
I feel very small because I'm about to plug my own Twitter account, but you can follow me at Mr. Mike Edison. Yeah. But it works, okay, because you know what? It helps people get to gigs, and hopefully people will tune in and listen to Arts and Seizures, and I'm excited. You're going to start a new book? What's next?
I got another book I'm working on, and A bunch of irons in the fire. Well, I got one called Scabs, which is about my life as a tattooer in a black neighborhood in the mid-90s. A few others.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, that's amazing. So, as ever, it has been the fastest half hour on the internet
mighty fast
today. Yeah. So I want to thank Mad Magazine, of course, number one, and Liz in the Booth and the Heritage Radio and everybody out there in Radio Land, Roberto's, of course, and how about these characters here at the awkward day table? They're not having any fun today. This couple, they really wish like they could be anywhere but here together.
I think I may have topped them for awkwardness, but yes, they look very uncomfortable.
Oh, are you kidding? This was a very romantic soiree compared to the brunch they're having. All right, for everybody here at Heritage Radio, it's Mike Edison and Photographer Moody. Go see him tonight. Dig his book, Induction of the Sycophant. Liz in the Booth, thank you very much. See you next week. The great Simon Chartier is coming next week. Simon Bar Sinister. It's going to be a genuine hootenanny. See ya.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archive programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.
Hi, listeners. We want to tell you about a podcast we're really digging. It's called Christopher Kimball's Milk Street Radio. Every week, they travel the world to find the most fascinating stories about food, including children who harvest cod tongues after school in Norway, and a detective who tracks down food thieves. And on Milk Street Radio, you can always find the unexpected. The comedian who ranks apples using an elaborate 100-point system, the secret history of grocery stores, and how to eat your way through Italy. They also interview the most beloved names in food like Jacques Pepin, Sola Alweli, Jose Andres, Jet Tila, Ina Garten, Nigella Lawson, and Padma Lakshmi. Plus, co-hosts Christopher Kimball and Sarah Moulton do live calls with listeners and answer their questions about ingredients, techniques, and culinary mysteries. Like, why roasting a leg of lamb made one caller's oven explode? Ever wonder why your bread won't rise or your souffle falls flat? Chris and Sarah have the answers. You'll also hear from a rotating cast of contributors, including Kenji Lopez-Alt, Cheryl Day, Dan Pashman from The Sporkful, and Alex Inouz, a French guy cooking from YouTube. Take a listen at 177milkstreet.com/radio or just search your podcast app for Milk Street Radio.